Got to get my technology ready. Last month, I started a conversation on the book of Ruth. And I mentioned it then, and I'm going to mention it again. One, I happen to love the story of Ruth. It's very near and dear to me. In a book that is full of, it reads kind of more like Game of Thrones sometimes than it does a love story. You know, the story of Ruth provides a ray of sunshine, especially after you get done with the books of the book of Judges, the stories that are in Judges, and as you start into 1 Samuel and you go into 2 Samuel. Ruth provides us a narrative of humanity, of what it means to be a human inside of God's system. I want to tell you guys again, just to remind you of the system that Ruth was in. And then I want to spend tonight just basically concluding. Because after I spoke, the first Sunday of last month, and I started this conversation with Ruth, we developed our small groups, and we talked about the story of Ruth. We read a chapter a Wednesday. And so I wanted to spend this time, we finished 2 weeks ago, so I wanted to spend this Sunday kind of concluding that conversation and kind of giving us an overview, a wider purpose of why we read through Ruth and why Ruth is so very important to us and basically why it is in the Bible. If you remember, at the end of Judges, we have this very depressing statement, and it's a very real human statement, and it says that they did everything they did what was right in their own eyes, this is demonstrating that man is doing whatever man wants. That God had built this system, had built a government, had given His people this land that they didn't have to fight over, that they didn't have to make war against. There shouldn't have been any conflict. If someone was in need, then the people, their neighbors next to them, should be able to provide everything that they need. And I imagine how wonderful that this would be to live in a society like this, that if I needed sugar, if I needed milk, or if I needed bread, or if I needed someone's oxen, I can go over to Dave's house and he has an extra oxen that I can borrow. And I would love to be a part of that society, a society that shares so openly, and that if tough times happen on my family, that I know there is a community bigger than my family that can support us, that can support me. When I spent my time in West Texas, I had a lot of trouble. I just had a lot of trouble in Texas. I'm a California boy. I was raised in California. I see you through the lens of a Californian, which basically looks like I just don't care about a lot of things. And in Texas, they care about a lot of things. They are very opinionated, they just hold to their beliefs and to their traditions. And one Sunday, we were talking about families that are in need, and we were talking about prayer requests. And there was a family that came across this prayer train, and they were saying how much this family was in need, that their crops hadn't come in, that the parts of their field that did provide for them, it wasn't enough, and that this family was going to be in dire need. And so what blew me away about this, because I'm used to hearing prayer requests, I think we are used to hearing prayer requests like that all the time, of people in need, and we pray for them, and we kind of leave it there. And so after that prayer, the community got together, this community of Sudan, Texas, which is a community of 1,000 people, and they donated for this family. They donated enough money for this family that it would provide for them throughout the year. And that's just what this community did together. When things were good, then they stored up money, they stored up funds, they stored up equipment, because they knew that it wasn't always going to be good, that there were going to be difficult times. And also they knew that if this family is in need and if I provide for them, then this community might provide for me when times are not so well here. I love stories like this, and I love to be a part of this human system provided by God that takes care of one another. In the first chapter, Ruth opens with the brutal depiction of the human condition. We see what happens when man is doing what's right in his own eyes. And that is not good. That man is not treating man well. That widows, orphans, the needy, the foreigners were being left in the dust. that the people who were excelling, the people who were making money, were just not giving it away. They were keeping it. They were hoarding it. And because of that, God's wrath fell on Israel. And so God used foreign nations to teach Israel an important lesson, and that is Israel needs God. Israel needs God. And so in order to teach that, God is using other nations, foreign powers, and they're sending, and God is sending them to Israel and giving them the keys to the kingdom. And so what was first meant to be blessings and provision for Israel turned into cursing. It turned into death. It turned into grief, all to teach them that they need to depend upon God. It's an incredible story that I wouldn't even want it to be in the Bible. If I were to write a love story, I would not want it to have such a negative story like Ruth, or like the first chapter of Ruth. If I was going to go about building my own Bible, building my own story, I would not want it to be so full of negativity, so full of death and grief. I would want it to be happy. I would want my story of Ruth to start in the second chapter, right? Right when they get over the death, they start moving back to Israel. In the beginning of the second chapter, it talks about Naomi and Ruth starting over again. And I love that story. I love the idea of starting over again, starting fresh, starting new. But the first chapter represents most of us and where we're at. I wonder if we were to go around and we were to hear each other's history, hear each other's story, how many of us would have a story of suffering, a story of pain, a story of hurt. I've always been amazed at small groups. I am a big fan of small groups because I love how we get to share our feelings. And I need a place to share my feelings. I know with a group of a lot of older people that as feelings is the last thing that you want to hear. But with me, I need to hear stories. I need to hear how you're feeling, how you are doing. And it's in those small groups and it's in those stories that we get to hear about our pain and our suffering and our sorrow. You know, I've been a part of fellowships where they did not want to go to small groups because they thought, well, we won't accomplish much. Our education will decrease because we're not going through books of the Bible. We may not learn enough or learn as much as what we're doing right now. But it's about our stories. It's about hearing each other speak. I have, again, always been surprised. I shouldn't at this point be surprised by when you sit a group of five or a group of four or even a group of three down and we ask each other how well we're doing. The truth always rocks me to the core. Hearing their pain, hearing our common suffering, our common issues. You know, we're starting a family group in the office. And it's for young marrieds, it's for marrieds with young children, it's for people who want to be around a conversation dealing with marriage and kids. And so when we look at scripture, we look at through the lens of what it's like to be married and what it's like to have children. And so we share so many stories of how sometimes our kids can just be awful. And no one believes us because they're always angels on Sunday nights and Sunday mornings, even though they were yelling at us on the way over here. And so we have to surround ourselves with a group of other parents who thought, yes, my kid is also an imposter. They act all nice on Sunday mornings, but at home they turn into demons. And so it is good to share our story, even if that story involves suffering. Even if that story is more similar to Ruth chapter 1 than it is to Ruth chapter 4. We have to open up about who and what we are. But however negative the beginning, the story quickly shows us the importance of our example. At the end of the first chapter, Ruth wanted whatever Naomi had. Naomi's faith in God, though desperate and ragged, gave Ruth an impression that it does matter how we choose God, that it does matter that we choose God. Now, do we believe that it can get better when we choose God in the depths of our depression and sadness? Sorry, I'm having problems with words tonight. Do we believe that it can get better when we choose God in the depths of our depression and sadness? Do we truly believe that when we are at our wits' end, that it gets better with God? I feel like so often, it's only when things are going well that we go to God. Again, it's only when we're at chapter 4 that we look to God and say, praise you. We praise your name, God. We love you. We love who you are. But when we're in the first chapter of Ruth, when we are introduced to pain and grief and suffering and weird decisions, the fact that Ruth had to decide between going back to her home and going to a land she had never been before, to be a part of a people she had never really met before, and choose a God that her first introduction was to Naomi and her family. When that happens to you, do you choose God? In the parts of depression, in the parts of parts of suffering in your life, do you really believe that it gets better when you choose God over everything else? And it's that everything else that actually should scare us. You know, I've always been amazed by people's decision to not love God or to not even believe he exists. I remember the first time I ever asked somebody if they believed in God. And I knew the answer already. I knew that he didn't believe in God. And this was in auto shop. And by the way, I was not being an awesome Christian at this time. I was a senior in high school. I was an awful human being. And so I didn't even know where this conversation was going to go, but I thought, well, I should try to do something Christian. I haven't done so in 6 months. And so I asked this guy, I said, do you believe in God? And he said, no, I don't believe in God. That's ridiculous. I don't believe in God. And so I asked him, why? You know, why don't you believe in God? And that is a very easy, I felt like that was an easier question to ask than the first one. You know, why don't you believe in God? And he said, well, my grandma died. And I have a horrible habit. Sometimes when I hear bad news, I laugh. It's a sickness. I know it's something that is inside of me that I try to correct. When I first met Natalie, she was horrified by this because sometimes I'd hear morbid news and I couldn't help but laugh for some reason. I didn't find it funny. It was just a bodily response. And so I actually kind of laughed at this. And he didn't get as angry as I would have. He didn't hit me, thank goodness. He probably should have. It probably would have taught me a lesson. And I remember, you know, at that time thinking, wow, that is an incredible way to justify unbelief. To say that you don't believe in God because your grandma died. That would I be able to respond in a way and say, well, if a baby is born, well, then would you believe in God? Would you believe in God then? You know, would you believe God only if good things happen to you? How fickle is that faith? And it even challenged me at that time of thinking, well, I only believe in God because, well, good things are going for me. It's like that first part of Job when Satan goes up to God and says, listen, I've traveled around, I have seen everybody, and the only reason Job worships you, the only reason he loves you is because you've built a hedge around him. And I've read that story many times thinking, yeah, how good is Job's life? That God has been building a hedge around him and not thinking that God has done the same thing for me. That is what I am experiencing right now. Maybe as difficult as it is this still under the hedge of God? Will I be as faithful if he removes that hedge? If he takes that protection away? If he takes that care and that blessing away? When I suffer, will I still choose God? And for whatever reason, Ruth is a far better person than I am. She chooses God. She chooses a God, a people, and a family that is new to her. And she goes off in a direction that is unknown. Now again, during our small groups, we tried to explore some of Ruth's emotional and spiritual development in this new direction of Ruth and Naomi going to Israel. Slowly but confidently, we see God showing his love through his chosen people. In the second chapter, we see this through Naomi asking Ruth, well, go to Boaz's field. He is a family member of ours. He could even be a redeemer. Go there and see what happens. Just follow his women around. And God will provide for us, hopefully, through Boaz. Through Boaz providing what was in the law in the first place. And that is that as reapers were going along harvesting a field, they were not to pick the field clean. They were actually to leave particles of grain on the ground. And that was so orphans and widows and foreigners, people who were hungry and couldn't provide for themselves, can follow the harvesters and pick pieces of grain up for themselves. It was a system, it was a social system that God had built in to take care of the needy, so that everybody could have some. Not everybody can have all of it, but everybody can have some of it. And we already see a glimpse of God's love towards the lowest of people. And we see him, we see his system blessing others. Now, what makes Ruth, again, so beautiful, it's because of how disgusting Judges is. If you have not read through the books of Judges, the book of Judges, that is your homework. Read Judges. Follow Judges, and then read through Ruth, and then go right into 1 Samuel. And you will see how great Ruth is within the Old Testament. Ruth is a shining example of God's system doing what it should, and that is blessing others. And so God is confidently, slowly at first, but confidently showing up in the lives of Naomi and Ruth through his chosen people, through people like Boaz, through Boaz's women, and through Boaz's men. We see God blessing others through others. See, in God's society, he had places called cities of refuge. Cities, actual places where you can go to for refuge. Places that were supposed to be purely for upliftment. So you can go and listen to the law of Moses. So you can go and be instructed in how to love others and how to serve God. This place, these cities of refuge, were meant to be seen exactly how God wanted them to, which is a sanctuary, a place where people can go and grow closer to God. In God's society, he had a tabernacle, a traveling temple that would go through the land of the land of Israel, and people can offer sacrifices. People can offer worship in what was supposed to be a symbol of God's presence. And it would travel throughout Israel. And it would demonstrate to everyone of God being with Israel, with his chosen people. And in this society of God's, he had what is called family redeemers. I love this. I love this concept of a family redeemer. Do you have a family redeemer in your family? Someone who you can look at and think, that guy, he's a redeemer. That guy, man, if everything went wrong in my family, this person would take care of me. This person would provide for me. And usually I feel like it's everybody's grandmother, right? It's always kind of the grandmothers I've always seen. They're the grandmothers who take care of the grandchildren, the grandmother who usually, it's the grandparents who kind of bring the kids back in their home and take care of them. In God's society, he had family redeemers. That if you had nothing, if you had absolutely nothing, even if you had to sell yourself into slavery, sell the land, which is your inheritance, just so that you can have something. If you had absolutely nothing in God's society, you still had a redeemer. You still had a redeemer. You still have something, something. And how far away have we come from that? You know, I would love to say that Judges, and again, the only good example that we have of this is actually within Ruth. You know, Ruth stands in such stark contrast to the end of Judges and to the beginning of 1 Samuel. By 1 Samuel chapter 8, they are already done with this system. They're already complaining to the point where they go to Samuel saying, we want a king. We're done with this perfect paradise on earth where we don't have a king or a congress or senators. We're done with that. We want a king. We want to be like everybody else. We want someone to stand between me and you. We want a mediator. We want someone who will be responsible for our actions instead of us directly. In this system that God has built, the nation stands in direct responsibility for their actions. When they disobeyed, and when they continued to disobey, and when they rebelled against God, they felt the immediate consequences of their actions. And by 1 Samuel chapter 8, they're already done with this. They say, we're done with this direct consequence. It's too much for us. We want a king. And then you tell that king what you want, and then that king will tell us what we should do, and then we will do it. And we will have no more problems. Yeah, that's not how it works. That is not how it works. However, this safety net of cities of refuge, of a traveling temple, and of family redeemers. This is the safety net that Ruth benefits from. Look at the risks Ruth and Naomi take. Naomi heads back to a land hoping that God might show some modicum of mercy. Ruth bets the farm by following her and dedicates herself to Naomi's care. Both of these women are taking on enormous risks. When you ask Naomi, all right, what makes you think that it's going to get any better in Israel than it has in Moab? What makes you think it's going to get better for you and Ruth? In Moab, your entire family was taken away from you. In Moab, you had nothing. What makes you think it's going to get any better in Israel? And then you look at Ruth. When Ruth gives up everything and says, I will follow you. Your God is my God. Where you die, I will die. I am with you all the way. To see the risk that they are taking. However, Naomi and Ruth take that risk. When Naomi directs Ruth to Boaz's field, you can see the possibilities running through Naomi's mind. Can it be? Will God deliver us? Will he take care of the lowest? That first time Naomi sends Ruth to the fields, and that first time that Ruth comes back carrying food in her arms with a story of, you wouldn't believe it, I met Boaz. He talked to me. He said he's going to take care of me. He said I should just follow his women and I should just pick up whatever I want. And he even directed his reapers to leave bushels of wheat, of grains for me. And you can get this picture in Naomi's mind. Is this God coming back? Is this the mercy that I have been hoping for? Is this the Redeemer that I have been wanting for so long? This is what makes God great. He is great at caring for the least and the most insignificant, but he is also great at removing the proud. God taking care of the lowest, this is what he is good at. This is what he does. This is what he's done since the beginning of time. Taking the least among us and making them great and doing great things through them. I love that it is God who takes shepherds and widows and orphans and the least and he turns them into kings and prophets and priests and redeemers. God takes the least of us and does miracles. But he also is really, really good at removing the proud. Removing people who think they are everything. Who think they are more than they actually are. The first king that the Israelites choose. The first king that Samuel hands the torch to. Saul. Saul is a beautiful example of self-destruction. Saul is given every opportunity. He looks the part. He looks like an actual king. He stands a head taller than everybody else. And it seems really obvious to everybody that Saul would make and should be a good king. And he is for a little bit. And then one horrible mistake, and it shows us the broken reality of our situation. That without God, we are nothing. That if we attempt to take his throne, that if we attempt to put ourselves or anybody else on the pedestal that belongs to God, he will remove us. Or worse, he'll leave us alone. He'll leave us alone. But in Ruth's case, we see God taking care of the least. We see God taking care of people who have absolutely nothing. And Boaz is a great example of what we should do. Boaz could have chosen to do the very least to take care of Naomi and Ruth, but he decides to go far and beyond what is necessary. When Ruth puts everything on the line, when Ruth, and I want to read this to you, so turn over in your books, your Bibles, to Ruth chapter 3. And we're going to start in verse 1. Here is Naomi and Ruth putting everything on the line, taking a very large risk here. And this is how it reads. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself and put on your best clothes. and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he had finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, "All that you say, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid." So spread your covering over your maid, and for you are a close relative. Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first, by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good. Let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." Now, I know that doesn't read off like a modern love story, but to me, it gets me every time. I know that, wait, you're my relative, isn't necessarily a modern pickup line, but it seemed to work here. It seemed to work for Ruth. Ruth puts everything. Boaz could have turned her in. Boaz could have stepped away and said, "Who is this random lady in the middle of the night trying to propose to me?" He could have tarnished her excellence. He could have displayed her as something other than a respectable woman, but he doesn't. He assumes and takes her risk and gives her an assurance that he will take care of this problem, that he will take care of the situation immediately. Again, this is God's system at its finest, and it stands in clear opposition to everything else that we read both in Judges and in 1 Samuel. And yes, we see in both of those books some semblance of normalcy. We see good kings and we see bad judges. We see good judges and we see bad or good kings. We see all of those in these two books. But within Ruth, we see God taking care, not a judge, not a king. We see God taking care of a widow. And this is how God wants us to treat each other. Not necessarily to marry any widow that we might come across, but he wants us to take drastic measures to care for one another. Remember what God has done for you. And this is why this idea of a redeemer is so important within the book of Ruth. This idea of someone coming along and taking you when you are the least valuable and finding worth in you. Turn over to Psalms chapter 19. And we're going to read the whole psalm because it's beautiful. "The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their utterances to the end of the world. In them he has placed a tent for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. It rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Its rising is from one end of the heavens, and its circuit to the other end of them. And there is nothing hidden from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than the honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and keeping them there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Acquit me of hidden faults. Also keep back your servant from presumptuous sins. Let them not rule over me, then I will be blameless, and I shall be acquitted of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. He draws this picture of the immensity and the power of God, of what God seems like to him, and that is immeasurable, that he is all-powerful, that his heat, his presence is just too much. And yet this God is my redeemer, that he is my rock, that he saw in each and every one of us something that is worth redeeming. He saw our quality, how much we are worth. I imagine that as Boaz was growing up, Rahab told him stories of how God redeemed her and gave her a new life and took care of her when she was a foreigner, when she was worthless. But yet God gave her a new community, a new people, a new family, and a new God. If you have any needs tonight, please come forward as we stand and continue to worship God.